Welcome to episode 47 of Mancy, a podcast about magic and the fucked up shit people did with it. In each set of episodes, we cover a different Mancy or method of magic. I'm RJ Walker. I'm a spoken word poet and writer. With me is my co-host, Elle.
I'm Elle Alder, a professional psychic and solitary eclectic witch.
Last week, we started our dive into canomancy, divination with dogs. There isn't much that I found regarding the practice of canomancy. however, there's a lot of significant historical dogs and dogs in mythology and folklore that are purported to be magic. We went over the history of Saint Guinefort, the unofficial patron saint of protecting infants, who is also a dog. We also talk about Noodle the pug.
Noodle. Oh, I was going to include Noodle's thing in the Instagram, and I didn't.
Oh. So Noodle is the most widespread practice of canomancy that I was able to find.
Like ever, I think.
Like ever. In modern history.
Yeah.
Or just history.
Recorded history.
Yeah, let's say that. We also talk about Sigmund Freud's dog.
Yofi.
Who he used to help with psychoanalysis, and the legend of Balto. Turns out the real hero sled dog was a husky named Togo, who had a fascinating biography. Balto was just there for pictures, but Togo was the real legend.
You know, I did post this in the photo dump on Instagram, and I have to say Balto is the prettier dog.
Balto is certainly the prettier dog.
So,
Togo looks like a mud rat.
Well, Togo, I think, is a mud rat. I think that he's a golem. Like, I don't think that he's real. 260 miles. He ran 260 miles. That's insane.
That's a lot. Yeah.
It's insane. Anyway.
The last episode focused a little more on real life dogs and like real things dogs have done. But today's episode is going to be more about dogs in folklore and mythology. Some of this is actually going to be spooky.
Spooky.
So get your spooky caps on.
I was going to say pants. I got my spooky pants.
We're diving into part two of canomancy, magic with dogs. First, I'd like to talk about a dog named Boy.
Okay.
A dog that did really exist. So this is a real dog.
Okay.
This is going to be like the only real dog we really talk about for the majority of the episode. But Boy has a dark reputation.
Oh.
It was rumored that Boy was gifted with dark magic and was a dog witch. Boy was alive in the 1600s during the English Civil War, and her master...
Oh. why did they name her Boy then?
We actually don't know the gender of...
Oh, okay.
Of Boy.
Of Boy.
Some reports was that a boy is a girl, and some reports that Boy is a boy. Also, his name Boy, but I thought it would be funnier to go with the
I think that Boy is a female dog, and also gender isn't real, so I'm not really sure that she cares.
That's why I went for it.
Yeah, that was funny
to go with that interpretation. Anyway, her master was Prince Rupert, a cavalier, and she would often accompany him into battle. Boy was a shapeshifter, a witch's familiar, a demon in disguise, an utterer of dire prophecies, and also a poodle.
Is that where Rocco gets it from? Is that why he's so evil? Because it's the mini poodle in him?
The poodle in his blood. A little white poodle. Boy, it was a little white poodle.
But she was fierce as fuck, I bet.
During the Civil War, there were two main factions. The Royalists, of which Prince Rupert was a member, obviously being a prince, and the Parliamentarians. I'm not going to go into great detail about this war, like why they were fighting it, but to reductively explain the conflict, it was a power struggle between the royal family and Parliament.
Okay.
Like, do we want a more of a republic, or do we want more of a monarchy? Mm-hmm. That was kind of... a really reductive way to summarize this very bloody conflict.
Yeah.
One of the ways the parliamentarians were fighting this war was with slander and propaganda.
Of course.
They started spreading rumors that Prince Rupert's dog was the devil in disguise and his witch's familiar.
Okay.
Unfortunately, their rumors backfired. Royalists doubled down on the rumors, painting Boy as a fierce and powerful wielder of dark magic that all will fall before.
Just this little poodle, and his peats are too small. The thing that hurts the most about him is when he stands on your lap.
They took the rumors and dialed them up to 11, stating that Boy was a shapeshifter and a demon who was contractually bound to Prince Rupert, so you better beware, he'll snick his sick his hellhound on you.
That was obviously, to be like, well, the monarchy is evil, right?
Yeah.
To be like, he's evil, and that's his evil dog.
And they were like, sure, but the monarchy is powerful, and this is my powerful witch dog.
Yeah.
So, there was also rumor that Boy was actually a Sami woman who was transformed into a dog. And Sami are like indigenous, like Norwegian.
I think Sami, yeah.
Sami, yeah, that's right. which, like, that's weird. According to the rumors,
I don't think Sami people are really particularly known for, like, their witchcraft practices. Like,
they've got a lot of, like,
I'm sure magic good, and indigenous,
like folk practices, especially, like, I believe sled dog traditions are important.
Well,
to them.
Would say, like, superstitions connected to that.
Yeah.
I just am not sure that I've ever heard of, like, Samis as, like, having flesh pedestrians, you know?
Yeah, maybe we'll talk about them for a Christmas magic episode.
Oh, that would be fun.
Because they have some, like, some Yule
Fuck
traditions that are cool.
Let's do it. That'd be cool.
Anyway, according to the rumors, Boy could find hidden treasures, was invulnerable to attack, and could catch bullets, like, in his mouth if anybody tried to shoot Prince Rupert.
Just jump up and
just like, ding.
Gotcha, bitch. Like.
Yeah. Also, Boy could prophesy, as well as, what they wrote, as well as the 16th century soothsayer Mother Shipton.
Ooh,
so it was like a famous prophetess, and they were like, this poodle prophesies as good or better.
How?
I don't know, devil powers.
But, like, how does he convey what – does he pick the tarot cards?
Have you ever seen an animated show called Mr. Pickles?
No.
Oh, it's about a dog that's possessed by the devil.
Mm-hmm.
I think I showed you clips of the Bigfoot episode of Mr. Pickles.
Probably, yeah.
Where Bigfoot is actually just, like – a guy who ratted out the mob and
started
getting surgery
to
make him Bigfoot because nobody would ever believe that you've seen Bigfoot. It's the ultimate witness protection.
I'm about two crises away from that. Two. That's how many we've left. And then I'm just moving into the woods as a Bigfoot. That's what's happening.
We'll watch some Mr. Pickles. But basically, Boy is Mr. Pickles in this story. To double down on these rumors even more, the Royalists made Boy their official mascot and promoted her to the rank of Sergeant Major General.
Amazing. This little white poodle is your commander.
The Royalists also reported some endearing qualities that Boy possessed, such as urinating every time the name John Pym, the parliamentarian leader, was mentioned.
Incredible.
Then in 1614, the battle was not going the Royalists' way, and Boy was tied up safely in camp, but mysteriously slipped the restraints. Not only that, but Boy managed to track down Prince Rupert through the chaos of battle. Rupert and much of his forces were in full retreat. They were losing hard, and Boy charged the enemy. And can you guess what happened next?
I think he died.
Yeah, he was fucking bitch slapped into the dirt and killed. Just like, pah.
Killed. I think one of the enemies probably let him loose, or someone who was like in the camp that shouldn't have been, that was like.
Or he just wasn't tied up that good. Like, dogs can slip restraints.
We can't. Yeah, Rocco is not allowed to be outside.
Especially like
supervision.
Like, imagine Rocco and there's like a fucking battle happening.
I was trying to decide if like Rocco would be a good, like, companion in the army. And I feel like, I mean, when I first got him, my ex and I took him to a farmer's market because we were just like, we have a new dog. We're going to go do cool things. And it was the last farmer's market he got to go to because he shit in the granola man's stall. And so, Yeah, he just got really nervous and shit in the granola man's stall, and we had to clean it up, and that was the last farmer's market he got to go to. So, like, would it be that, or would Rocco, like, turn on his, like, insane hellhound and just, like, bite the ever-living fuck out of people? Like,
no, he would run away. He would just run away. He would just run away, and he would get lost.
He would come find me, and he would be like, Mom... and then, yeah, if I mean,
that's kind of what
him.
That's kind of what Boy did is
find his dad.
Yeah, she found Prince Rupert and so much for being invulnerable and catching bullets.
Yeah, just dude, poor dog.
Poodle killed.
So did they lose that? Was like the revolution, I guess, successful for the Republic?
I don't know. Let's see. Who won the English Civil War? I feel like I should know this, but I don't.
Well, I guess they still have monarchy, but they also have parliament, so.
The parliamentarians won.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
It ensured that monarchs would never again be the supreme power in British politics. So probably a good thing it went the parliamentarians' way.
Yeah.
Probably a good thing that Prince Rupert lost.
Yeah.
Honestly. Still. This is fucking,
poor dog.
This fucking
boy.
Poodle is just like
probably just
devil.
Wants to eat some snacks. Probably just wants some chicken off the plates, you know?
Next, I want to talk about the place dogs have in mythology.
Okay.
Obviously, Anubis is the head of a jackal, and Norse mythology has Fenrir, a wolf that grows to swallow the sun at Ragnarok.
Mm-hmm.
Japanese mythology has the kitsune type of yokai. Yokai is like a ghost demon that serves as a trickster spirit in various legends and folklore. I want to focus on dogs, though, rather than like wolves, hyenas, jackals, coyotes, foxes, or like other like dog derivatives. I just want to talk about them good boys.
I just want to talk about some fucking dogs.
About dogs.
Y'all can wait. We're going to talk about dogs now.
And one particular kind of doggo that seems to exist in several mythologies and folklore traditions around the world. The hellhound.
Mm-hmm.
The most famous hellhound in mythology, I would say, is probably Cerberus.
Mm-hmm.
Is probably the most well-known, mostly because of Disney. The three-headed dog, which guards the gate of the underworld for Hades, the
god of the dead. Don't forget about Fluffy in Harry Potter. It's a Cerberus. Three-headed dog.
That's a Cerberus, yeah, I guess. Yeah. But... There's really one Cerberus. We
don't
know. There's one true Cerberus.
Okay.
Cerberus
guards
and
the
Cerberus. Cerberus guards the gates of Hades. Born of the half serpent, half woman, echidna. It's like a snake woman.
Okay.
Cerberus also has a serpent for a tail.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Cerberus' job is to prevent the dead from escaping the underworld because that would be bad.
Mm-hmm.
The most famous story featuring Cerberus is the 12 Labors of Hercules, which capturing Cerberus and dragging him up from the underworld being the 12th labor. To do this, Hercules needed the help of Hermes, Athena, and Theseus. He was tough. Cerberus also has poison breath. He's just poison breath.
That is Rocco.
A little nastier than the Disney version, honestly. Maybe the Kingdom Hearts Disney version, he spits like fireballs and stuff.
Oh.
And so maybe like, yeah, about as nasty as that. There's also a hellhound in Norse mythology,
mm-hmm.
Garm. I don't remember how far we got in Hellblade, but I'm pretty sure you fought Garm. Garm is one of the boss fights.
I think so.
You remember the part where you like run through the areas with no light and have to like do the puzzles to keep the torch lit? That's Garm. That's what you're running from, is the Hellhound that guards the gate of Helheim and is Hela's pet.
God, I forgot about how just terrifying that game
is. Oh,
so
scary.
So scary.
The fucking panic attack, that whole section where you have to run from Garm and then you fight Garm at the end.
Didn't you have to get me through that? Wasn't that in the building? And I couldn't see anything?
Yeah. I
had too much anxiety. It's like, RJ, fix it. I can't do this.
And when Garm howls, it heralds the coming of Ragnarok.
RJ had a big yawn.
It was
a big yawn.
In Celtic mythology, there's the Cushi, or fairy hounds. Like a lot of Celtic folklore, there isn't that much to go on, and there's contradictions. See the Irish magic episode as to why.
Also the Halloween episode, yeah. So much of it.
But Here's what can be confirmed. The Kushi have shaggy green coats, sometimes covered in moss, algae, or other plant matter.
Cute.
And they are entirely silent, save for their bark. And they only bark 3 times. And it's a bark that can be heard for miles, even if you're far out to sea.
Okay.
And if you do not find safety and shelter, by the time you hear the third bark, you die of a panic attack. You fucking just die of fright.
You just die because you don't know what's coming, but it's definitely scary.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Pretty spoopy.
I want one of those.
You have one of those.
No, he doesn't have moss.
I have almost died of a panic attack from your fucking dog just barking at nothing.
At least 3 times this week.
Yeah.
He does sound terrifying. But, like, the moss is cool. The green fur and the, like, fairy creep. That's cool. I like it.
Yeah, they're like shaggy dogs.
They're cool.
So, related to those, I might say this wrong, and I didn't find the IPA. It's the Cwn Annwn, C-W-N-A-N-N-W-N, of Welsh mythology.
Okay.
Annwn is the Welsh version of the Otherworld, or the Fae, and it's a realm of eternal delights. We discussed the Wild Hunt myth in our Christmas special last year, and the Cwn Annwn are part of the Welsh version of the Wild Hunt myth. In place of Odin, the ruler of Annwn is named Arwen, who leads the Wild Hunt, a spectral hunt that parades across the sky. And the Cwn Annwn are Arwen's hunting dogs. Ooh, that was a mouthful.
Yeah, that was a lot.
And if you hear their howls or growls, it means that death is coming for you.
I feel like, remember the other night, maybe a couple weeks ago, when there was that sound? And you're like, I don't know what the fuck this sound is.
That, like, siren-y sound?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I bet it was one of the dogs.
That's what it was.
Probably.
It was the Wild Hunt.
Well, that or the fairy dog.
Oh, the fucking Kushi.
But because you were in your house, you were safe.
Yeah, I was in sheltered.
Yeah.
Of course, in Egypt, we have Anubis, who is the god of the underworld, who has the head of a jackal. For that reason, though, there are several instances of ritual dog burial in ancient Egypt.
Oh.
In their culture, dogs also appear to be associated with the underworld. Amhe was a minor god of the underworld, whose name means either devourer of millions or eater of eternity.
That's fucking awesome.
And he was depicted as a man with the head of a hunting dog who lived in a lake of fire.
Oh.
He is sometimes seen as an aspect of Amit, the personification of divine retribution. I know ancient Egypt is your thing, so mm-hmm. maybe in the future we can do like an Egyptology episode. Dive more into that.
I feel like, yeah, I want to. Although I just sneak Egyptology into like everything that we talk about. we have when we went to Egypt, one of our friends came with us and she kind of started a romance with one of the men there. And my mom had dinner with her the other week. And I was like, is she still seeing that guy? Because if she goes back to Egypt, can I just come? Like, could I go with – I'll fly with her to Egypt and she can go do her thing and I'll go do mine.
Can I just come?
Can I just come? Can I just
in my pants
go to Egypt? If someone said that I was able to do that, then yes, probably that would be the response. Egypt was the best thing I've ever done. It was incredible. Want to go again. Wait, where's my sugar daddy? I should have a sugar daddy who pays me to go to Egypt.
Yeah, probably.
That would be good.
In Aztec mythology, there's the god of death, Zolotl.
Mm-hmm.
Who has the – and I'm probably saying that wrong. He has the head of a dog, and dogs have important religious significance to Aztec people. Zolotl is the twin to Quetzalcoatl.
Oh, that's what I thought. Okay.
And is viewed as representing twins, monsters, misfortune, sickness, and deformities. He is represented as a dark personification of the evening star, which is the planet that we call Venus. One of his important jobs is to protect the sun from the dangers of the underworld, guiding it through each night. And there's like whole mythological narratives with Zolotl that I kind of want to save for an
we
episode.
We should, yeah.
Like specifically on Mesoamerican magic.
It's dope. It's so cool. We should just save it.
And well, I'd really like to have somebody who's part of that culture on the episode to like discuss it and also correct me when I screw up.
I'm wondering if we could ask Willie's friend.
Yeah. I think,
bet she would be wonderful.
Yeah.
For that.
Or that professor, if he ever comes back.
Yeah,
to be on the show. That would
oh
be, like, really cool. we met, that Mexican folklore professor at an IHOP. We should have asked
him. It was great. Yeah, we should have been like, hey.
even though we're not going into depth, I thought it was worth mentioning Zolotl, because when it comes to hellhound myths, they have one, but it's a little different. Whereas the dog guards the underworld, Zolotl guards the sun through the underworld. So I thought that was an important distinction.
Yeah.
In Hindu mythology, Yama, the god of death, owns two watchdogs who have four eyes. They
each?
Are each.
Yeah. Where do they go? Are they like underneath this other?
Yeah. Well, eyes, and then
above
on the forehead, and later you'll see that that is significant in other cultures as well. When dogs have spots above their eyes.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
They are said to watch over the gates of Naraka. It's like underworld mm-hmm. place. The hunter guard, hunter god, Muthapan from I just lost my place. Sorry. Muthapan from the North Malabar region of Kerala. Ooh, lots of hard to pronounce words for me. Has a hunting dog as his mount. So he just like rides a battle dog.
Amazing, like Freya and her cat.
Yeah, it's this hunter god that rides a battle dog. Dogs are found in and out of Muthapan's temple. And offerings at the shrine take the form of bronze dog figurines. The dog, Shivan, is also the vana or mount of the Hindu god. I'm going to try to say this right.
The Hindu words are very hard for me to pronounce as well.
Yeah. Bhairava. Bhairava.
Okay.
Bhairava. Yeah.
Bhairava. I think that was one of the ones that we talked about in my Queer Magic episode, but I can't remember. No, that was someone else.
Yeah, and in one story, the god Yama is disguised as a dog and helps somebody approach heaven. Therefore, in a lot of Hindu beliefs, the common belief exists that if you care for and adopt dogs, they can help you pave the way to heaven.
Aw, they have – isn't that where they do the dog ceremony?
No.
Okay.
We're getting there. There's a lot. I am going over like tons of mythologies.
I know. I was like, you're just going through.
I'm just shotgunning
okay.
dogs in these mythologies so we can see how close they are. And they're all connected with
they're
death
all,
or
yeah,
the underworld.
And the underworld. That's yeah. really interesting to me. I never realized that.
Yeah. Dogs are shown in the background in iconography of Hindu deities like Dattatreya. Many times dogs are also shown in the background iconography of other deities. Dogs are considered still unclean and lower species than humans. So they're not allowed inside temples or houses, but they are allowed as pets. Like you should take care of them, but you don't treat them like people.
Oh, my dog totally gets treated like a people.
Yeah.
My dad, when he came over to the house yesterday, he was like, oh, this is Rocco's house. I was like, yeah, it is the cat. Rocco, Spectre, and Maggie own the house. Like we live around them.
Yeah. In ancient Mesopotamian culture, dogs were not associated with death or the underworld per se. They were a symbol of Ninisna, the goddess of healing and medicine. So they were associated with healing.
Oh.
And her worshippers frequently dedicated small models of seated dogs to her. In the Neo-Assyrian and Neo-Babylonian periods, dogs were used as emblems of magical protection.
Mm.
There's a temple in Isin, Mesopotamia, named the characters used to create this name were not working with HTML. So it's like a bunch of just like random glitch characters.
Okay.
But it translates to doghouse.
Okay.
Enlilbani, a king from old Babylonian first dynasty of Isin, commemorated the temple to the goddess Ninis. I just said this name. Ninisna.
Okay.
The healing goddess. Also, there's a small amount of detail known, like, about this temple, but there is enough information to confirm that a dog cult did exist in that area. More than 30 dog burials and numerous dog sculptures and dog drawings were discovered when the area around that temple was excavated.
You know, I know everyone jokes about me starting a cult, but really the cult is going to be for Rocco.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I doubt that. No. He doesn't have the charisma.
He does, though. He fails once you the get charisma to know check. Him. Nuh-uh. Everybody yeah. loves him after they bite him one time. After he bites them. One
yeah,
time.
I think you automatically fail your charisma check if you bite somebody.
No, but it's because he starts out so, like, bitter. And then when he warms up to you, you're like, this thing that doesn't like anyone has chosen me. I'm chosen now.
See, Spectre, I think Spectre has advantages in the charisma department.
Yeah, Spectre does have advantages in the charisma department. Charisma department, it's true. He's very, very charismatic. He's very handsome. He likes cuddles. It is kind of gross that he drools on you, though.
Oh, like your dog doesn't fucking drool and, like, vomit and fucking shit everywhere.
Spectre, when we're cuddling, though, he will literally drool on my boobs. And that's uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable. I'm going to say that. Okay.
In Zoroastrianism, we are still going.
I'm ready.
In Zoroastrianism, the dog is regarded as an especially beneficent, clean, and righteous creature. Zoroastrianism, if you don't know, is an ancient religion in, like, the Iran, mm-hmm. like, area in the Middle East. Like, very ancient.
And it's very – it's magic, right? Like, based heavily in magic.
Well, a lot of magic is based on Zoroastrianism.
Oh, okay, it's
probably the more likely scenario.
Okay.
So, like, these are animals that we need to feed and take care of because they're, like, righteous creatures. Mm-hmm. But they also believe dogs have a special connection to the afterlife. Not like hell per se, but heaven specifically. The bridge to heaven is guarded by dogs in Zoroastrianism. As such, dogs are afforded funerary services.
Aww.
In the Vendidad, which is like a religious text, it is stated that the spirits of 1,000 deceased dogs are reincarnated in a single otter. Because they're water dogs.
Well, otters are so great. That's so good.
Hence, killing an otter is a terrible, terrible crime.
I do not know anyone, like even hunters, who'd be like, we should kill otters. Like otters are, I think, off of, well, yeah, no, they're off the... off the menu. I was thinking about baby seals, but they're not otters.
And if you kill an otter, it brings drought and famine upon the land that must be atoned by the death of the killer. So if
yeah,
you kill an
you
otter,
you have to be killed.
You have to die. Or the killer has to perform a very long list of deeds that are considered pious, including healing dogs, raising puppies, paying fines to priests, as well as killing animals that are considered noxious or unholy, like rats, mice, various species of reptiles, amphibians, insects, and cats for some reason.
I don't love that. I don't think that the way to like atone for a sin of killing an animal is to kill other animals. I'm just, not real convinced
you
on
kill
that
one otter and it's like killing 1,000 dogs, basically.
That's so sad.
I just like... inhaled badly.
You aspirated yeah. some spit.
Zoroastrianism also has a ritual called Sagdid. It is a funeral ceremony in which a dog is brought into the room where the body is lying so that it can look at it. Sagdid means dog sight in the Middle Persian language of Zoroastrian theological works. There are various spiritual beliefs thought to be obtained by this ceremony. It is believed that the original purpose was to make certain that the person was really dead, since dogs have more accurate senses and are able to detect signs of life that a human might miss. A four-eyed dog, which is one that has the spots above its forehead, mm-hmm. is preferred for Sagdid. All of these creatures, these like cultures, have these myths to draw an association between dogs and the afterlife. Elle, why do you think dogs are so connected with death and the afterlife?
So what is intriguing to me. So I didn't realize that one. What's intriguing to me is that cats are really viewed as this connection to divinity, right? So it's like this way of like accessing gods and goddesses and divine knowledge and like using like alieromancy
yeah.
Is really common and they're really associated with that. So I've been thinking about this. I've been pondering. I think it's maybe because dogs are much more practical. Like, it's very hard to have a cat that has a job unless it's like a farm cat or a mouser. It's pretty much all they can do. But dogs can be trained to do a whole bunch of different stuff. And I think because of how practical they are and because of how loyal they are, like, cats are, I would say, like, Spectre loves you. And that would be very hard if he got separated from you. Like, Maggie loves John. She did not give a fuck about going from John's ex to John. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't – it would not fly for me to, like, transfer Rocco to someone else. Like, I couldn't, like, call up my ex and be like, hey, do you want to come get this dog? That would probably be the worst. And so I think it has to do with, like, companionship and the thought of the things that were with us through lifetime being with us in the dead. Like, that's a really comforting thought. And because dogs can just be seen as this, like, unconditional thing that kind of walks with you to support you and take care of you in practical matters of, like, protection – using dogs as like a protective animal a lot in old cultures could be reflected in the afterlife and wanting to be with them in the afterlife.
Yeah, my theory is pretty much the same as yours. I agree.
Yeah.
You know, we do view dogs as companions and especially when you go on a journey. And what greater journey is there than dying?
Well, and if you think about people who are houseless, a lot of people will have dogs to be with them. You really don't see them with cats because the cats wouldn't stay or come back. But the dogs are very loyal. And so, yeah, I just think about that.
Yeah. And, you know, dogs do have those practical purposes such as as a guardian of something like a gate.
Yeah.
You know, and they're also like vicious and kind of scary.
They certainly can be. And so if you think about both like the how people can love their own dog and be totally comfortable with their own dog. But if you meet another dog, you don't know how they're going to react to you. So there's that idea of them being loyal to you and not other people. And that protective nature is like Cerberus would make sense there too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now that we have all of this mythology out of the way, that was so much mythology, and so much of it lines up. It's kind of weird.
It's weird, yeah.
Let's talk about the folklore that likely sprung from these spiritual beliefs. Let's talk about the black dog, which
Rocco
is a kind of cryptid.
Dog.
He is a black dog.
Yeah,
it's a cryptid, a ghost, or a demon in European folklore. Let's talk about, you know, just what is up with this myth. The Lore podcast has an episode about this already, so I'm going to focus on some of the parts that they missed or stories that they may have passed up. Honestly, there's like so many of these black dog stories that more than like we reasonably have time to cover. So I'm just going to go over some notable ones. In the Lore podcast, he goes over one of the longer ones. Which involves,
I think I've listened to that episode.
Yeah, if you see a black dog once, it's for joy. Twice, it's for sorrow. And the third time, it's for death.
I've seen Rocco like three times today.
Oh, man. Death imminent. But yeah, I'm just going to like shot like I did with the mythologies, kind of like shotgun these like various tales and just the very quick summaries of them.
Okay.
In Devon, England, in the late 1600s, there was a squire who was notorious for being just a piece of shit, just a jerk. Richard Cabell, known to many as Dirty Dick.
No.
He was known as Dirty Dick, and he was described as monstrously evil.
Jesus.
Dude. Imagine being such a bastard they call you Dirty Dick.
I like, do people call him that to his face? Because I probably
That was after he died. After he died, they started calling him Dirty Dick.
Okay, that's fair.
It was believed that he had sold his soul to the devil. Mm-hmm. It was also believed that he murdered his first wife. Mm-hmm. He had a passion for hunting, but it was mostly a passion for murdering animals. When he died, it was believed that black dogs surrounded his mausoleum and that he would rise from the grave to go on spectral hunts with the beast.
Whoa.
And he was the inspiration for the Sherlock Holmes story, The Hound of the Baskervilles.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so he's just like, all right, Dirty Dick is up and ready to kill a bunny or two. Let's go, doggies.
Yikes.
So here's another one. A black dog is said to haunt Ivelet Bridge near Ivelet in Swaledale, Yorkshire.
I was like, what country are we talking about?
Ye old British. The dog is allegedly headless.
Okay.
So spooky headless dog, and it leaps over the side of the bridge and into the water. Although it can be heard barking at night, it is considered a death omen. And reports claim that anybody who has seen it died within a year.
Whoa.
And we'll see this motif a lot when it comes with the black dog. It's often a predictor of death or misfortune if you spot one. A man who lived in a village near Aylesbury in Buckinghamshire would go each morning and night to milk his cows in a distant field. One night, on his way, he encountered a sinister black dog. And every night thereafter, until he brought a friend along with him, he would see this black dog. When the black dog appeared, he attacked it, using the yoke of his milk pails as a weapon. Hi-ya!
Whoa!
But when he did so, the dog vanished, and the man fell like senseless to the ground. He was carried home alive, but remained speechless and paralytic for the rest of his life.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah.
What happened?
He got black dogged.
He got spooked?
It's like the fucking Ghost Rider did the penance stare at him or something.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
He was visited. The black dog came.
Spooky, spooky. Oh, you know, I forgot to talk about the weird phenomenon with the bridge that dogs commit suicide on. Have you heard of that?
No, that's awful.
At the end of the episode, we'll talk about it later.
Okay.
It's weird. It's just like a bridge. When people walk their dogs on this bridge, the dogs jump off the bridge. It's a very bizarre phenomenon. Some think that there's like a sound or a frequency
that they can that hear that something. They're like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah.
And that would make sense.
Yeah. But, you know, we'll
I'm not really sure that like dogs are capable of the thought of like suicide because they're very much basic and like alive basic.
I'm going to stop you right there and let you know that dog suicide is actually a problem.
Is it really?
Yeah. Yeah. And there's like there's one dog that wanted to die just so badly that it drowned itself in a puddle. I know.
Are they abused?
Bummer.
Or like what's that makes
no,
me feel
no, it's
good
doggy depression.
That Rocco's like doing good. He's a happy
doggy
kid.
Depression is actually real.
Well, I mean, okay, well, Rocco is on Prozac.
Yeah.
So maybe that's why.
Yeah, so maybe if we have time, we'll talk about that at the end of the episode.
That makes me really sad. Like, that makes
yeah,
my heart
it does.
Hurt.
It does. It is really sad, which is probably why I forgot about it, because my brain was like, no, we're not going to think
Can't
about
do
this
it.
Anymore.
It's too
not
going to
think about this cursed knowledge you have about dog suicide.
Wow.
Anyway, more black dog stories.
Okay.
In Galley Hill in Lutton, Bedfordshire, it is said to have been haunted by a black dog ever since a storm set the gibbet alight. So, like, the fucking hanging post just lit on fire in the 16th or 17th century.
Okay.
We find that black dogs appear in places connected to executions, and they also appear at crossroads and bridges. Likely, this calls back to the fairy dogs of Celtic folklore as being connected to this other world. Like, those things are thresholds, basically.
Yeah.
They're also connected to storms and lightning strikes. In Jersey, not New Jersey, Old Jersey, the one in Europe,
mm-hmm.
The black dog of Bewley tells of a phantom whose appearance presages storms. Le Chien de Bewley, it's French, is a monstrous black hound with eyes the size of saucers, and in some versions of the legend, a chain which it drags behind it, the sound of which is often the first warning its victims have of its presence. And if you hear the chains, you have to run, because it's gonna get you.
Hey.
Although terrifying, it has never done any physical harm to anyone. Its appearance is said to herald a storm. However, that never does any physical harm to anyone thing has kind of led people to think a little more critically about this one. It might just be Scooby-Doo.
What?
Scooby-Doo. You'll see what I mean. So of the more prevailing theories about the Black Dog of Bully is that the rumor was started by smugglers who maintained and embellished the legend. The idea was to scare people away from the bay. The sounds of chains is easy to replicate from an unseen place to scare the shit out of somebody and get them to stay the fuck away from your illegal operation. The pier of Boule Bay was an especially safe place for smugglers for many reasons, with this ghost story being one of them. There's even a local pub called the Black Dog, which lends credence to the smuggler theory. Basically, it's a bunch of smugglers that made up a ghost to scare people away from their illegal operations, just like a Scooby-Doo villain.
Scooby-Doo!
They were Scooby-Dooing.
It's super easy to Scooby-Doo people, though. Yeah. Think about how easy it would be for me to be like, shit's haunted, we don't go there.
Yeah.
I do that. And people are like, cool. Like, I respect that choice.
There's a few legends where the Black Dog is actually good luck.
Yeah.
Near the town of Lyme Regis in Dorset stood a farmhouse that was haunted by a black dog. This dog never caused any harm, but one night the master of the house, in a drunken rage, tried to attack it with an iron poker. The dog fled to the attic where it leaped out through the ceiling. And when the master, the spot where the master struck, where the dog had vanished, he discovered a hidden cache of gold and silver.
Ooh.
So I guess maybe do attack the black dog. I don't know. You could get fucking Ghost Rider paralyzed, or you could find gold. The morals of these legends are vague.
Conflicting.
Yeah. The dog was never seen again indoors, but to this day it continues to haunt at midnight a lane which leads to the house called Hay Lane or Dog Lane. Dogs who are allowed to stray in this area late at night often mysteriously disappear. A bed and breakfast in that area is named the Old Black Dog, and part of the legend states that the man who discovered the treasure used it to build an inn build that inn, the Old Black Dog.
Mm-hmm.
So... yeah. It's like, I'm going to name my inn after yous. And the ghost dog is like, I'm just going to eat every stray dog. That's all I ever wanted. It's weird. These are weird.
I don't know. I like my dogs to be wholesome. This is not a very wholesome episode of dogs.
No. The wholesome episode was the last one. Sorry.
Okay.
Another tale also connects the black dog to an execution site. In the parish of Tring, Hertfordshire, a chimney sweep by the name of Thomas Cowley was executed by hanging in 1751 for the drowning murder of Ruth Osborne, whom he had accused of being a witch.
Mm.
So he was like, I just like sweeping chimneys and killing witches and you're a witch. And so he drowned her and they were like, you just fucking killed this girl. We're going to hang you.
Yeah.
So he gets hanged and his spirit now haunts the site of the gibbet in the form of a black dog. And the clanking of his chains can also be heard. In one tale, a pair of men who encountered the dog saw a burst of flame before it appeared in front of them, big as a Newfoundland with the unusual burning eyes and long, sharp teeth. After a few minutes, it disappeared, either vanishing like a shadow or just like sinking into the earth, just like...
Okay.
Some believe that Ruth Osborne actually was a witch and that she had cursed him for murdering her. And that's why the black dog is there to chain him to hell and make sure he never escapes.
I like that better than him being the black dog.
Oh, yeah? That he, like, transformed into the black dog?
Yeah, I don't like that. I don't like that thought. Fuck that guy. I like the idea of the dog keeping him where he belongs in hell.
While many of these stories connect the black dog to witchcraft and the devil, there are benevolent versions of the black dog. So here's a little more wholesome one, and it's called the Church Grim.
Okay.
The Church Grim guards a local Christian church and is attached to the churchyard I wrote a typo. basically, the Church Grim is a ghost dog that guards local Christian churches and the cemeteries attached to them from those who would, like, profane them, including, like, thieves, vandals, witches, warlocks. For this purpose, it was a custom to bury a dog alive under the cornerstone of a church as a foundation sacrifice.
Yeah, fuck that. Fuck that. Fuck churches who think that's okay.
Sometimes the Grim will toll the bells at midnight before a death occurs. So this dog will just, like, ring the bells at midnight if somebody's about to die. At funerals, the presiding clergyman may see the dog looking out from the church tower and determine from its aspect whether the soul of the departed was bound for heaven or hell. So dog sight, like in Zoroastrianism, this, like, church Grim would watch from the fucking bell tower.
That's definitely canomancy.
Yeah, and see if somebody was going through heaven or hell. Going to heaven or hell. The dog's just like, bad boy. Good boy, bad boy. Bad.
Bad.
Another tradition states that when a new churchyard was first opened, the first man buried there had the duty of guarding it against the devil. So they didn't go to the afterlife. It was their job to haunt the churchyard.
Mm-hmm.
To save a human soul from such a duty, a black dog was buried in the north part of the churchyard as a substitute.
That's kind of cool. I mean, I like that.
I find this kind of Christian folklore fascinating because it has, like, nothing to
do with
the Bible or Jesus.
Like, folk magic, right?
Yeah.
And that's – but, I mean, we've seen that in, like, every single culture that we've looked at with magic. We see, like, these are the traditional things. This is when Christianity decided that everything had to be Christian. And this is the weird fucked up mashup of, like, Christianity and folk culture that we fucking made work because Christians just couldn't not let it be what it was.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
There are similar stories of black dogs acting as benevolent guardians. One popular story features a chaplain or monk traveling alone through the forest at night. As he walked, a large black dog appeared at his side and just remained there until he left the forest. On his return journey through the woods, the dog appeared again, just the same as before.
Mm-hmm.
Years later, two convicted prisoners would tell the chaplain that they would have robbed and murdered him in the forest that night, but they were intimidated by the presence of his dog, which was just this ghost dog that just vanished.
Damn.
Yeah. There are more black dog stories, like fucking stacks of them.
Yeah.
I think what I like about them so much is how, like, connected they are to the mythology and the beliefs of ancient people, and how this, like, black dog cryptid is so representative of what dogs are. At their best, they are companions, friends, helpers, and guardians. At their worst, they are weapons, symbols of oppression, and vicious enforcement.
Yeah.
All dogs may go to heaven, but we probably won't for the sins we've committed against them and the sins we've used them for. One of the prevailing motifs of black dog stories is that they are hellhounds sent by the devil to collect souls. If you recall our Rhapsodomancy episode, we discussed the legend of Robert Johnson, a blues musician who is rumored to have sold his soul to the devil. He would feature hellhounds in his music, and it was believed that the devil sicked his dogs on him.
Yeah, there's a lyric in one of his songs that is saying that there are hellhounds on his heels, and he's trying to run away from them. That's a lyric.
Yeah, and likely the symbolism has more to do with white supremacy and the way dogs were weaponized against African Americans for sickening practices like slave catching rather than, like, demons or Christian devils.
Yeah.
This leaves an understandable fear or apprehension toward dogs that persists in some black communities today, especially since canine units are routinely used to violate people's rights, disproportionately the rights of black Americans.
Mm.
Right here in Salt Lake City, a pattern of violence using dogs was identified by the Salt Lake Tribune, and the mayor put a suspension on all police dog use until, like, this year this happened, until all the evidence could be gathered about whether their usage was even ethical. The Salt Lake Tribune reviewed 39 body cam videos that involved canine usage and found abuse in 19 of them.
Wow, half.
Half, yeah. This was after the Tribune published a story including a body cam video of an SLCPD officer ordering a canine to bite a black man who was compliant with his hands up. You can hear the officer calling the dog a good boy and telling the dog to bite the man for inflicting – just to inflict senseless violence on an innocent person. I bring this up because I think it's important to recognize these kinds of injustices when talking about spiritual practices. Folktales and music become a tool through which the oppressed can communicate safely about their oppression.
Mm-hmm. And oftentimes in coded ways that other people who are not oppressed will not understand.
Right. And this is why I'm a cat person. You ever see a police cat? No.
Because I feel like I have.
Cats would never help the cops.
Dodo. I bet Dodo somewhere has a police cat. Yeah, I have really conflicted feelings because I enjoy dogs as like bomb sniffers. I think that's a really good use for them, like in the airport and stuff. But that's not when they're being trained to literally be vicious. And they pick the most, like, the dogs that are the most aggressive in order to do that. The ones with the most bite, that kind of stuff. And that's bad.
Yeah,
that's
they're bad. Selectively bred to be, like, weapons and tools for vicious enforcement since their birth. It's really fucked up. And let's not forget the ethical issues that, like, come with dog breeding.
Yeah.
Puppy mills are basically factory farms where purebred dogs are churned out in high numbers to turn high profits. Often puppies are born with deformities from inbreeding and they're just executed on the spot. They're thrown into a fucking grinder. The puppies that survive are not properly socialized or weaned. They're just sold as soon as possible, usually to pet stores or through online classified ads where they pretend to be backyard breeders. Not that this is anything new. To finish off canomancy, I want to talk about one particular dog breed that might just be a crime against nature itself. Some even advocate to stop breeding this kind of dog entirely because the selective breeding this dog has gone through has resulted in constant health issues and even low quality of life. The pug.
Yeah.
That's right. We're going for full circle. We started canomancy with Noodle the Pug. Now we're going to finish by discussing the legend of pugs as a breed and why they are so fucked up all the time.
So I just want to throw this out there. You know in Midsummer how they have the oracle?
Yeah.
What if that's pugs?
That's pugs.
Like, are we breeding them specifically to be oracles? Is Noodle the final one on this very long lineage of dogs that are
if
oracles?
If that's the case, we need to fucking stop. Midsommar was a horror movie and we should not replicate anything in it.
I just was thinking if we're talking about, like, really inbred things. And then, like, Dune, that prophet, the main guy, the – what is his name? The white savior dude.
Yeah, I
forget. The protagonist.
Yeah.
He was inbred to be an oracle.
The Bene Gesserits selectively bred his psychic powers.
Yeah, so I'm just saying, this is what Noodle is.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's also like a motif in any kind of like superpower thing. Like in My Hero Academia, there's like selective breeding to get the best superpowers out of people.
It's that, like, I feel like that goes into eugenics and that kind of shit.
Yeah, it gets eugenicsy.
Yeah,
it does. And it's bad and we should not do it. So the pug breed goes all the way back to ancient China. They resembled the Fu lion statues that guard temples. So in Tibet, they were bred to be shrine guardians and to be companions of monks. Mm-hmm. They would be selectively bred to look more like the statues.
With the nose. Is that where the nose comes from?
Uh-huh.
Wow.
The Fu lion became what we know today as the Fu dog. Some Fu lion to a dog. And you've likely seen somebody with a tattoo of one.
Yeah. Probably not a very good one.
Yeah. The popularity at shrines and temples resulted in popularity with the Chinese royalty. From there, they were bred for the sole purpose of being entertaining. They wanted this goofy dog to essentially be a court jester. So they bred the derpiest dogs with the derpiest dogs to get the alpha derpy dog. But then things really go off the rails. And this legend likely is not true.
Okay.
But here it is anyway.
Okay.
The Emperor of China absolutely loved dogs, especially pugs. He had a huge kennel and ordered his servants to breed him the perfect pug for himself. Specifically, he wanted them to keep breeding pugs until one was born with forehead wrinkles that were the character for this emperor's name.
What the fuck?
So the servants got to work with a mass breeding project, going as far as confiscating pugs from citizens and temples just to breed them until they got one with the right forehead wrinkles.
Did they get one?
They were never able to achieve this goal. But the constant inbreeding and puppy farming resulted in a very special kind of dog forever.
Okay, so I don't agree. I don't agree with that, but I am.
But it's also likely not true.
Okay, but I am thinking if you wanted it to be like something specific, you could do Botox and like fill it in, fill in some of the forehead wrinkles.
Just cyborg
the
dogs.
That's shit that I would do. Yeah, I'd be like, yeah, I can't. There's no fucking way. So Botox.
The real story is that pugs were bred to be lap dogs. Yeah. Not just bred to look like the food dog statue, but to be sedentary like statues. So they could sit on the emperor's lap for a long period of time without being disruptive. Mm-hmm. But yeah, pugs tend to have a lot of health problems. Pugs were very much treated as members of the royal family, and they even had their own, like, royal guards assigned to them. Still, all of this breeding to create the perfect royal companion has led to some serious genetic issues for the breed. One of them being obesity, since they were bred to be sedentary. Another being a condition where they suffocate because the shape of their head obstructs their airway.
They also get, like, they have brain swelling because of the shape of their head as well, and their eyes, yeah.
When they get excited, they have these weird reverse sneezes that cause them to basically get the wind knocked out of them. Just randomly, they'll be like, like fall over. And it doesn't really hurt them. It just fucking paralyzes them for a second. These like reverse sneezes that
Rocco does reverse sneezes, but he doesn't. Yeah, he doesn't. I don't know. Stop breathing because of them.
Also, their eyes can just like fall out of their head.
Yeah,
like they protrude so much that like a minor bonk will just cause their eyes to just. And they'll be blind for the rest of their life. Mm-hmm. Their forehead wrinkles can also collect bacteria, resulting in potentially deadly infections on the face.
Like yeast infections and that kind of stuff, yeah.
Pugs are considered a pedigree dog. Having their connections to Chinese and European royalty, who were so enamored by the breed when it was brought over from China, they were like, this is going to be our royal breed now, too. Problem is, these kinds of show dogs or purebred dogs are all fucked up. In 2008, an investigative documentary carried out by the BBC found significant inbreeding between pedigree dogs, with a study by Imperial College London showing that the 10,000 pugs in the UK were so inbred that their gene pool was the equivalent of only 50 individuals. 50.
Whoa, that's bad.
Yeah. That's it. Now, I'm not saying we should stop breeding pugs. I'm not saying we should do that. I'm saying we should stop this bullshit with purebred dogs, just in general.
Yeah.
And just be more accepting of mutts. I'm saying we should reintroduce dogs to genetic diversity because what we have done to these animals is fucking terrible. In Noodle's videos, his owner John says that he is 13 years old. That is a fucking miracle. The average age for a pug is like 12 to 15 years. So Noodle is very lucky to have a good dad who takes care of him and makes sure he gets plenty of exercise and outdoor time. Noodle may very soon pass on, but he will live on through the lessons he's left behind. Be kind to yourself and allow yourself to decide whether that kindness is self-improving or self-care. It will one day be on us to decide what days will be bones days and what days will be no bones days. And there may no longer be a separation between the two. Some moments will be bones, others will be no bones. But if we take the time to get on our feet, we can decide if it's best to just collapse or keep walking.
Yeah.
Anyway, do we want to talk about dog suicide?
Yeah, maybe.
This is really sad. I think I wrote a poem about this. So there's this dog suicide bridge. And it's in Scotland. And it's just crazy. I haven't written anything down. But when people cross this bridge in Scotland, their dogs just jump over the edge. Local researchers estimate more than 300 dogs have jumped off this bridge. Tabloid reports say it's 600, but at least 50 dogs are said to have died. And the people, obviously, in Dumbarton, Scotland, are really superstitious. One guy said, we grew up playing the Overton grounds, and we believe in goats. That's Irish, not Scottish.
I was like, I don't know what you're doing.
We grew up playing near the Overton grounds, We believe in ghosts here because it's all we've seen and felt, spirits all our lives up in here, according to one taxi driver in this New York Times article. Why do you keep kicking me?
I don't know. I think you're just sitting closer than I'm used to.
You're swinging your feet like a toddler.
Do my feet touch the ground, RJ? No, look under the desk and tell me if my feet touch the ground. They do not. This is a curse of being short.
But yeah, doggy suicide is a real thing. Like, here's an article, Psychology Today. Yeah. I wish I could find the article I wrote my poem about. I don't even know where that poem is anymore. That poem I decided was too sad.
Yeah, that's really fucking sad.
Like, me committing suicide, that's a sad poem. A dog committing suicide, draw the line.
Yeah,
draw the
line it's there. Too much. Well, and I'm wondering, like, with that, is it dogs that are in, like, abusive or neglectful homes?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it just, like, brain chemicals?
A lot of it is just brain chemicals. Like, there's something called stress-related self-destructive behavior that many dog breeds were said to have. And a lot of it is due to that fucking inbreeding that happens that just gives them these emotional disabilities. But like a Newfoundland dog had been acting less lively over a period of days, being seen to throw himself in the water and endeavor to sink by preserving perfect stillness of the legs and feet. Every time he was rescued, he attempted to do this again before he finally held his head underwater until death. The newspaper ran stories about the dog as well as ducks that had also allegedly drowned themselves, although the veracity or certainty of these cases is disputed. But yeah, just this Newfoundland dog jumping in the pool just to die. But this like stress-related self-destructive behavior, they often say a coyote will chew off its own leg to get out of a trap.
Yeah.
They think that that's kind of the root of doggy depression is they're in a constant state of stress that they cannot control due to a brain chemical imbalance, and they resort to self-destructive behavior.
That is why Rocco is on Prozac and why why I do so much to like make sure he's comfortable, that he's safe, that he knows where things are, because his brain chemistry is like probably just as fucked as mine. So like, you know.
Yeah, he's a goober. That's for sure. We have to give him a lot of CBD.
Yeah, he gets a lot of CBD. He takes his Prozac. What else do you need? CBD and Prozac pretty much takes care of most things.
Now, Elle, I believe you have received a divination toy for Rocco.
I have.
And it's a Zoltar machine.
It is.
With little fortunes inside of it.
It is.
It's got three fortunes.
It does.
I think one of them is bad.
Yeah.
One says scritches in your future. The other says treat time.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one says try again or something like that.
I don't know. Yeah, I can't remember what it was.
But shall we head home and see what fortune has in store for Rocco?
Yeah.
Okay. So we are back at home with the dog. I just recorded a video of him doing the Canomancy reading with his new dog toy. Here's the audio from that video.
Now we're doing Canomancy on the podcast, which is divination with dogs or magic with dogs. We got this fortune teller toy that has like fortunes inside of it. We're going to give it to our Canomancer / hellhound / demonic dog Rocco, whichever one he pulls out, is going to be the answer to the question. And Jess wants to know, when will life calm down? Ready, Rocco? Go. Investigating.
Oh, first one out.
First one out. What is it? Oh, now we gotta get it. Fuck. Fuck, shit, fuck. Come on.
Can I have that?
Come on. We're doing magic, Rocco. Come on. Give me that. Got it. I see many scratches ahead. Okay.
So that was Rocco's decision, I guess. I don't know if you'd call it a decision, but he pulled that out of the toy. It's like a toy with a bunch of toys inside it, and the toys inside of it are like little psychic reading Zoltar cards that say different things on them. So, Elle, what does this mean for Jess? I'm going to turn the microphone towards you. What does this mean for Jess, for wanting life to calm down? When will life calm down?
Well, I feel like one gets scratchies when one is like needing comfort and also settling into things. And it can be like a moment of like a pause or a deep breath.
A pause?
A pause. So actually,
pause!
Did you really just burp on the recording?
Sorry, I'm chugging a monster right now. Anyway, pause.
Jesus. Anyway, I was going to say that that's a really good sign. It's like things are calming down. Like soon ahead would be like very near future to me. So I would say probably it feels like the next 3-ish weeks might still be a little hectic. And then once we start getting towards Christmas and into like January, I think you'll notice a big like relief and things shifting into that kind of calmer place. But
oh, he's pulling out the second one.
But be sure to RJ needs to go find out which fortune Rocco just pulled out.
The second one says, they know you ate the shoe.
Yeah, so they know you ate the shoe.
That's the secondary.
That's the undercurrent. So yeah, there's a little bit of, with that, at that exact moment, I would say a little bit of needing to kind of come clean or needing to take accountability for things or that kind of stuff going on. And I feel like that's kind of related to some stuff from your past that's like coming up and like going to be reoccurring here pretty quickly. So it feels like once you kind of get that settled and once you kind of get your whole self back and complete, things will be a lot easier.
Well, I hope that was helpful, Jess. I want to point out how much of a psychopath this dog is. Like, Rocco systematically destroys squeakers. There's like a process. If it squeaks, Rocco locates where the squeaker is in the toy and then strategically chews just on the corner of the toy where the seams are to get the seams wet.
Mm-hmm. He has with his back teeth. Like, it's like specific.
He grinds them down with his molars, and then once they're wet and weakened, he tears it open. And then he locates the squeaker and pulls it out.
And he pulls out the fluff, and he like will go, he'll pull it out and then he'll just spit it off to the side.
Yeah, he'll just disembowel the fluff. Oh, hi, Spectre.
Spectre's afraid.
Yeah, Spectre's terrified watching this because Spectre squeaks. But once he pulls out the little plastic thing inside that actually squeaks, the next step is to pull out the little noisemaker in the nozzle so that it will never, ever squeak again. It is Rocco's personal goal to silence all squeaks
that exist. I love getting him like the 14 squeaker toys because those are just the best. But yes, he is surgical almost in like how he handles the destruction of toys. We're going to post a photo of Rocco's desecration of the Zoltar machine.
Yeah, that's Mancy Pod on Instagram.
Yep.
And then at Mancy Podcast on TikTok, I'm going to post the video. We had a time getting the toy from him,
But yeah, Inspector is just on my shoulder like a parrot cowering in fear, watching Rocco destroy this toy. This is a horrific ritual that we've gone through many times. But Jess, I hope your reading was helpful.
I hope you were not perturbed by RJ burping in it. Rude.
Anyway, yeah. Thanks, Jess, for supporting the show.
Hit us up on Patreon, and Elle will do a reading for you on the show using whatever divination method we're covering, patreon.com/Mancy. Also, if you like the show, please share with your friends. The more support we have, the more episodes we can make. If you like my writing, you can pick up books at rjwalkerpoet.com. Also, a charity play I wrote will be live streaming on December 16th and 15th. You can find details at utaharts.org/alliance-theater. It's called The Lord of Misrule, and you donate money during the play to the homeless shelter to make the actors do fucked up shit. It's a good time.
It's very fun. If you wanted to get a reading from me, you can find me on Etsy at Laurels of Lux, on my website, laurelsoflux.com. You can email me, laurelsoflux@gmail.com. I did want to send like a quick shout out to both Ryan and Andy, who have written us super sweet, cute emails.
Fan mail!
Yeah! And I just am busy and not really present on the Earth plane very much, so I haven't written them back.
Oh, on the Earth plane.
Is that not true? Is that not true, RJ? How much time?
I'm not really present on the Earth plane at the moment.
Would you describe me as always being connected to reality all the time?
I mean, that's a fancy way to say that, like, you've been very busy and also been, like, having annoying health issues.
And I'm mentally ill, so there's that.
Fucking, sorry, Professor, I'm not going to make it to class. I'm not very present on the Earth plane at the moment.
Listen, when I say shit like that, people love it. Like, people
sure
who get readings from me are
I'm
like,
sure
oh my
do.
God, you're not on the Earth plane. Where are you? Where do you go? Where do you go? Are you in the Akashic Records? Can you tell me more about the Akashic Records? Fucking, who was it? Oh my God, I had surgery on like Friday. And as they were like putting me down for anesthesia, like they have the fucking mask over my face. They're like, line up your butt with the hole on the bed. Like it was a whole thing. And one of the fucking nurses was like, oh, you're a psychic. Could you tell me my future? As I was getting surgery, someone asked me to do that. Anyway.
Basically, they just Doctor Strange'd you out of your body with
yes.
anesthesia. It's like, pew, third eye open.
Anyway, I just wanted to say that. But thank you guys so much, Ryan and Andy, for your awesome fan mail. Y'all, like, I don't think that people tell artists very much, and also artists are very awkward, like, when people compliment us, but it means a lot for you guys to relate to it. We're glad that so many people give a shit about what we're saying. We're hopefully going to have some exciting news about network stuff coming up, and it really means a lot to hear from you guys. So even if you don't get, like, a response, it doesn't mean I don't love it. It doesn't mean I don't immediately screenshot all of them and then send them to, like, 10 people to be like, wow, we did a good thing. So
keep in mind, Elle does not respect the privacy of your emails, and will share them with everyone.
Yeah, well, if you're a client and you're asking about your reading, I will.
Yeah.
If you're sending me fan mail, RJ gets it immediately.
Yeah, I do get it. That's true.
I screenshot it and immediately send it over. Yeah, and I'm like, wow, well, we
just want to make sure
thing.
We knew only the fan mail gets shared.
Yeah, no, only
your readings do not get shared.
Your readings are not shared with other people. I don't, like, give people access to my Google Drive with all, like, 900 of my readings and let them go through it. That doesn't happen. But the fan mail is really great. We really appreciate it. Thank you guys so much for supporting us and, like, reaching out and listening. It really means a lot to us. It makes all of the work that we do very worthwhile. So, thank you.
The music was provided by, in order of appearance, Hayden Folker, Miyu, and Scott Buckley.
Oh, we didn't use Arthi Vinka today.
I was trying to be dramatic. I did the whole thing with the microphone.
It sounded really good.
I'm sure it did sound really good. And then, I don't think we did Arthi Vinka today.
I wanted, because I thought you were going to say Arthi Vinka.
Okay, bring the microphone close.
Okay,
and put your hands around it. Let's go around.
Okay.
Okay.
And now say, we didn't use Arthivinka today.
We didn't use Arthivinka today.
And this is the Mancy ASMR channel.
This is the Mancy ASMR channel. It's so wonderful to have you guys join us. We'll see you next week.